Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast. I'm Janie Lee Grace. This is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. I'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there'll be inspiration from experts, quit lit authors, and sober heroes. Hi, and welcome to the podcast on this very weird week. It seems just so bizarre that it was only a week ago, just over a week ago, I was bringing you Dr. Gemma Newman's interview about the coronavirus. And of course, that was already a few days late, as it were. But then literally everything changed after that, everything. So I apologise if you're just catching up on that interview now. And of course, she refers to schools, still being open and stuff. So none of us can keep up with anything at the moment. But I really hope that wherever you are in all of this, I really hope you are safe and well and coping. There's been so much on social media, hasn't there? And I mean, my top tip actually would be try and avoid too much social media. I'm guilty of putting stuff out there all the time, but I'm also really aware that if we're going to kind of protect our mental health through all of this, we have to distance ourselves from too much media generally, actually, too much listening to news reports, too much social media. It can just be absolutely exhausting. So I think you have to kind of put boundaries around it. But what I was going to say was I've been in a state of sort of, as everyone has, it's just been this really weird feeling of not being able to settle into any kind of new normal. Literally everything is thrown up in the air. Those of you with kids will know that the different, the added dimension that brings. I mean, I really do applaud, I should say, frazzled parents who are, maybe trying to work from home and perhaps, don't even have a garden. And oh my goodness, it's so very difficult right now. And on social media, there's an awful lot going on that is, about opportunity. The word for crisis. There is no word for crisis in Chinese. I think that's the theory, isn't it? The word actually translates as opportunity. And, I've seen all the positive posts and a lot of the stuff about what good can we bring from all of this, and if the planet is healing, and all the free stuff that's out there, and there is a wealth of amazing stuff, and it really does feel like, in many ways, communities are coming together, and that really is incredible. But by the same token, there's a little bit of me that just sort of wants to also say, it's really crap right now. It's really hard. And for some people, it's beyond hard. They can't yet focus on what good might come out of this because they're really struggling financially, struggling with their mental health and well-being, suffering from grief, actually. Obviously, those who've lost loved ones are going to be grieving. But it's not even just the grief of someone passing. It's grief of what you've lost, of what your life was. And if your work, your whole work and your livelihood, if you're working in a field that you absolutely love, and that's literally taken away from you. And I do know a few people in this situation. Their whole business and life is intertwined, and in one fell swoop when we went into lockdown, that's it. And it may not ever come back. It may not be possible for it ever to come back. And there is a grief there. And I think we have to acknowledge that. I suppose what I'm trying to get to is I haven't made sense of any kind of new normal. I'm guessing you probably haven't either. But I think the one thing I just want to really share right now, and again, that might change by tomorrow. but the one thing I just really want to share right now is that however you're feeling over all of this, if you are feeling absolutely shattered and fearful, it's entirely normal. That's all I want to share really around this, because I'm conscious that for everyone who is managing to post pictures of you know, flowers and rainbows and all the rest of it, there is someone who is going to be thinking, okay, am I the only one then that I can't see any light at the end of this tunnel right now for me? Obviously, that leads into my fear for people turning back to alcohol after they've ditched the booze. And oh my goodness, what a crying shame that will be. If that is you, if you're on the edge of that, just reach out for help, because there is help available, really. Find some support that you need. Obviously, I run the Sober Club, and it is a membership site. It's not very expensive, but you are very welcome to join it. The support there is absolutely amazing in our community, and all of the resources that we can bring for you. But there's tons of free stuff out there. You join whatever you feel can work for you. If you have no one, you know, to tell what's going on, then DM me. You know, just reach out for whatever help you need right now, because this is just not a time to be drinking again. In fact, for those of us who are solid in our sobriety, wow, are we grateful for it. So unbelievably grateful. This is the best time to be sober, to not have to be stressed about pubs closing and running out of alcohol, and just the way alcohol messes with your mind. It increases anxiety so massively. You know, with all of this going on, we do not need any extra anxiety. We really don't. And I'm so fearful for people who are drinking, and they're going to be drinking even more. I mean, what is going on with the off licenses being declared essential? You know, what does that actually say about our country, that the off license are deemed essential trading? When we can't go to the dentist, I've just heard that my dentist is completely closed. We can't go to church. We can't, or everything that we can't do, quite rightly, in the name of distancing. But we can buy alcohol. It's astonishing. And of course, in the same breath, I understand there are some people who are alcohol dependent. And I don't know what the answer is for those people. I so hope all of the alcohol services are available for those people. But for the majority of people, if you're listening to this, you are probably a grey area drinker. You can stop. You can stop drinking. You can make that choice. So please make that choice. There's never been a better time. In fact, if you hold up, you know, and you have some time on your hands, commit to some personal development and do your alcohol-free challenge. Actually, this is a fantastic time to do an alcohol-free challenge and support yourself, you know, in other ways. Support your immunity, because you know, alcohol is terrible for our immune system, as well as for our mental health. So anyways, you've heard me say all of this stuff lots of times. I am a really big fan, changing subject a bit, of using this time to focus on our well-being. Yes, you know, we're going to reach for the sugar if there happens to have been any in the shops, perhaps, but we can, within reason, still look after ourselves. We can get out into the fresh air. You know, we're incredibly fortunate, as I record this podcast anyway, we can go out for a walk or whatever, go out for a run, and that's just absolutely amazing. There's also some incredible online classes, as I'm sure you know, loads of free stuff out there, yoga, Pilates, fitness sessions. We can also sing, you know, old Gareth Malone with the choir, how amazing. We can send people messages, we can do stuff online, we can learn a new skill, we can learn a language, we can do some gardening if we have a garden, we can knit, we can paint, we can, you know, there's a ton of stuff. But we can also focus on our own personal health and well-being, which means we can ditch the booze, we can make some time for meditation. One of the reasons that people say they can't meditate is because they don't have time. Well, perhaps now this might free up for some people some time in their day. Of course, I'm talking to you all as if you're not working, but I fully realise that lots of people are working full time from home and trying to deal with kids, or maybe you're working for the NHS or a key worker, in which case we totally applaud and salute you. Just a word about for people with kids, by the way, I just share my two penneth for what it's worth. I think a lot of head teachers and school teachers are being very understanding at this time and have compassion. But whether they do or they don't, my tip for you as parents, if you're frazzled by all of this, is, this is a time your kids need to feel confident and as chilled as it's possible for them to feel. I don't think it's time when you need to try to become, top home educators. Home education is a choice, and it's a very, very different lifestyle to school. I used to home educate my kids, and I'm in touch with a lot of home educators, and it's completely different to just having your kids at home and then trying to sort of enforce a whole load of lessons on them that have arrived from the school. It's completely different, and I just wouldn't stress over it. I would honestly allow your kids, at least right now, allow your kids time just to process all of this too, and to make life as, in inverted commas, normal as possible for kids, because I really fear for how traumatised they're going to be if they've got really, really stressed out parents. It's really hard. But I think, encourage the kids to do stuff that they enjoy doing and come up with some inventive, things for them to do. Print out some quizzes and some of the amazing activities that are happening online, the things that you can, just get the kids creating, really. If you've got the ingredients, get them baking or get them doing something that will help the whole household. Anyway, so that's just my kind of two penneth on that. I did write a blog post where I used the acronym of self-care and gave some suggestions around what I think works at this time. So please go to thesoberclub.com and you can read that blog post there. But without further ado, let me get to my guest, because I love this guy's work. I've interviewed Dr. David Hamilton before on the podcast. I've met him many times. We're both Hay House authors. David is incredibly prolific. He's written way more books than I have. He's just such a charming person and just really so passionate, so knowledgeable about the stuff that he does. He wrote the book Why Kindness is Good for You, which is an absolute classic. If you haven't got it yet, get yourself a copy of that book, because right now, even though K doesn't fit in my acronym of self-care, it is one of my absolute top tips. Kindness is one of the few things we really can hang on to right now, because you can be above all else kind to yourself and kind to other people. Maybe you can't stand in a queue and buy them a coffee, the person behind you or whatever, but there are still loads of things that you can do, even if it's sending an email, sending a message, putting something in the post, just smiling at someone, even from, 3 meters away, wherever you happen to be. But David has a really unique take on boosting our immunity and using the power of our mind to heal our body. So I think you're going to absolutely love this podcast interview with David Hamilton.
David Hamilton, so lovely to connect with you, albeit virtually. How are you doing? You all right?
I'm doing very well, Janie. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good. It's great to be able to. I know you said you're writing a book, aren't you? So holding up is quite good for you right now.
Yeah, in some kind of ways, I haven't changed from yesterday today, because I spent the whole day at my laptop yesterday.
I know what you mean.
And I've spent the whole day at my laptop today.
Yeah.
And if nobody told me what was happening in the world, I might not have noticed, given the fact that I haven't barely moved from this spot.
Just for anyone who is new to your work, and I know that you've been a podcast guest before, so I think most people are aware of you, but just give us a really quick sort of potted CV, just to get people a little bit up to speed.
So I'm a former organic chemist. My PhD is organic chemistry, which has nothing to do with organic food. It's really just the process of building molecules. And the molecules I built were pharmaceutical drugs. So I basically worked in the pharmaceutical industry, building drugs and developing drugs for cardiovascular disease and cancer. But I got really interested in the mind-body connection through the placebo effect. So I began to study why and how belief or feeling or expectation or mindset could have a physical impact on the brain and a physical impact on the body, because I found it fascinating how many people were improving on placebos, on sugar pills, on fake drugs. And so I found that so intriguing that my mini project, my personal project when I was working in the pharmaceutical industry was to learn and understand the mind-body connection and how to harness that for our own health and well-being. So after 4 years of working in that industry, I had so much information I was desperate to share with people. So I decided to resign and write books and teach. And that's what I've been doing ever since, has been writing books, teaching, giving talks, workshops, etc.
Yeah. And I know, you know, we've interviewed you before. You're very prolific. You have some amazing books. You've done some incredible work around kindness. We'll talk about that in a moment. But first off, I just wanted to talk a little bit about your views on how we can, you know, again, using the mind-body connection, where does that fit in when we try and boost our immunity? You know, like never before, everyone is now focusing on their health and their immunity. So what are the things that that all of us can do?
Well, there's a few in terms of mind-body. I mean, the obvious thing for the immune system really is to eat a healthy diet, you know, something that's full of, you know, fruits and vegetables in multiple colors. And what you're doing is you're adding a rich supply of nutrients to your gut, and then that can support your immune system. So aside from the obvious things, and I won't go into any detail there because that's things that other people write and speak about. But in terms of the mind-body connection, there's mindsets that support the immune system. And it's really the opposite of stress. Think about what stress does. And stress can depress the immune system.
Mm. Well, so, that's the issue at the moment, isn't it?
Absolutely,
that's a big
yeah.
thing. You know, this fear, this stress, it's so contagious, and you can feel it, you know, really. I mean, all of us, I think, feel it rising. You've only got to turn the news on or open up a newspaper. If you do that too many times a day, you absolutely can feel those anxiety levels rising. So, yeah, you're absolutely right.
Well, physiologically speaking, the opposite of stress is kindness, is the feelings induced by kindness.
Yeah.
Because if you think of what stress is, you know, stress is a feeling that you feel in response to something. And it's those feelings that generate the physical effects of stress in the body. So the fact that you produce stress hormones like adrenaline and cortisol, they don't just happen because you're in a potentially stressful situation. They happen because of how you feel.
Yeah.
About being in that potentially stressful situation. So it's the feelings that switch on the stress hormones and then all the physical effects. But when you be kind, the feelings induced by kindness produce, I call them kindness hormones, really just to make a distinction to show that there is physical consequences. And it turns out that kindness is physiologically the opposite of stress. Almost everything that stress does in the body, the feelings induced by kindness do something quite opposite, through production of things like kindness hormones and other things. So in terms of supporting the immune system, being kind or generating those feelings, scientists call this affectionately the Mother Teresa effect. They got volunteers to watch a 1 hour video of Mother Teresa on the streets of Calcutta, carrying out acts of kindness and compassion, caring for people on the streets. And when they watched that video, scientists measured the levels of an immune system antibody in the saliva and that actually lines mucous membranes, secretory immunoglobulin A, that's a fancy word, SIGA. It's a vital part of the immune response. And what they found is levels of that immune system antibody increased by 50% simply by watching that video. And the reason why they increased is because watching the video generates those feelings that are induced by kindness. So kindness feelings, some scientists call it elevation.
Yeah.
It induces an elevated state, which is really a term in this context has to be about the feelings that are anything to do with empathy, kindness, and compassion.
Yeah.
How that feels.
Yeah.
And so the feelings itself trigger some physiological effects, which amplify these levels of SIGA, of this immune system antibody. So really kindness itself, if you take that idea and broaden it a bit, kindness itself, because of how it makes you feel, can support the immune system. And not just in the sense that it's cancelling out stress, but in and of itself, it's actually doing something to overall support the immune system. But you can actually... Oh, sorry, on
you. No, carry on.
No, there are other things, more direct ways of supporting the immune system that have been tested even in a randomized controlled trial for women going through a chemotherapy for breast cancer. And scientists asked half of the group of women to visualize their immune systems destroying cancer cells. And so typically they'd imagine the immune cells in any way they like, but on average, people tend to settle on something like a piranha fish with big teeth. Mm. That are thereabouts, or a pack woman, pack man, you know, that are thereabouts, or something biological if you know what a macrophage looks like, for example. But what they did is they imagined these immune cells swimming through the bloodstream, finding cancer cells, and with their big teeth going, chomping down and crushing them and destroying the cancer cells. Yeah. Now, in the randomized controlled trial, what they found, even after four cycles of chemotherapy, when key immune cells dropped in those going through chemotherapy, they hardly dropped at all in those doing the visualizations. In other words, what the visualization had done is it supported the immune system even through four cycles of chemotherapy. And the scientist in that paper, and I quote, said the immune system was still highly cytotoxic even after four cycles of chemotherapy. Cytotoxic basically means killing cancer cells. Right. So the immune system is still working highly even after four cycles of chemotherapy, only in the women who had visualized their immune system doing their thing.
So if scientists have done these studies and these are out there in the public domain, why isn't this being used all the time? Why aren't we learning this in school? Why isn't it kind of common knowledge across the medical profession? It would be very useful at this time, wouldn't it?
You know, Jenny, you actually said the words there. It's just not very common knowledge. Right. It's not that people don't believe in it or agree with it. It's just hardly anyone knows about it. It's why I write about it. It's why I've written about it in that particular... Well, there's a few of those studies, actually. There's actually three or four of them I've written in my book, How Your Mind Can Heal Your Body. But, yeah. But I've written about... I talk about them in a lot of my talks, my public talks that I do. And even on social media, sometimes I'll share visualizations or information on this kind of thing. I mean, I've been saying to people, not that this is any... it's not been tested scientifically, but you know, if people are worried about coronavirus, one of the antiviral visualizations that I know people have done, and I've certainly did it for things like colds and flus in the past, is a virus has to get into a cell. Mm-hmm. And so a very standard antivirus visualization is you imagine as the virus is coming through, about to poke its way through a little hole in the cell, the hole in the cell is called a receptor. You just put like a frying pan in the way. And viruses like coronavirus have these lots of little spindly things, the little protein things. And so as it comes to poke one of those wee spindly things into the cell receptor area, you put the frying pan there to block the receptor, and the wee spindly end on the coronavirus goes poof, and it gets burst, and it just crumples up. And eventually you just imagine it disappearing. And that's a kind of antivirus visualization that people have used for colds and flus and other kind of things.
So would we have to imagine lots of cells all over our body and lots of frying pans then? I mean, for someone brand new to this, who may not really quite have worked with the concept of visualization before, talk us through how any of us could use something simple like that. Because I love the idea.
Yeah,
it's even fun for kids, isn't it? Because I feel really concerned at the moment the way that quite a lot of young children are really feeling really very quite traumatized, actually. They don't feel safe, you know, and I hate that. So, yeah. I mean, that it's actually a fun thing to do, isn't it?
Yeah. And first of all, in terms of that even being fun, this isn't something that I would ever recommend people do instead of washing their hands, instead
of
staying home. You know, it's something that we do as well because we've never really tested this kind of thing. But I've been saying to people, you know, in addition to all the other things you're doing, you know, have some fun.
Yeah. Well, it won't do any harm, will it?
It won't let's do any face harm, it. No. So you can, there's one of the, you can do it in one of two ways. And so you can visualize just a single cell or you can visualize, and then one virus particle trying to get in and getting blocked, or you can visualize that happening in lots of places. It doesn't ultimately matter. Because the whole process is just symbolic. You're just saying this. In a sense, visualization mobilizes your body's natural resources to deliver the result that you're in, intending. So I believe these kind of visualizations, what they actually do is support your immune system in its own natural way. So you could do it for let's say this was a cell. I wish I had a tennis ball here. Imagine a tennis ball was a cell.
Yeah.
And imagine the little virus is a wee spiky circular thing, and it's coming up, and it needs to, there's little, not quite holes, but little like doorways in cells, tiny little doorways called receptors. And the virus needs to poke into one of those to get into the cell. And so what you do, you take your frying pan and you just imagine laying your frying pan over the little hole. The little virus comes in with its little spike and it hits the frying pan, it crumples, it crumples up. And then you just imagine the whole virus just turning to dust out of that. So you can see that happening repeatedly, time and time again. Like every time you think about it, maybe 10 or 20 times a day, you just do that visualization. It'll take you 30 seconds.
Fantastic. And then what about for people who already do have some symptoms? Maybe they already are ill. How can people help to, you know, do some little visualizations if they're to do that, you know, to boost their immunity?
So you do the second part of it. So there's two parts to that. The first part, that part there, is for people who want to protect themselves. The second part are for people who already have symptoms. The way that a virus works is it replicates inside the cell. So you have to visualize something symbolic that's to do with replication. Now, a simple replication device we have in the house is the photocopiers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So just imagine a photocopier that's producing copies of the coronavirus. So they just pull the plug out. Switch off.
Great.
And it's really just visualization is a set of symbolic images and steps that symbolize something that you wish to happen, a process that you wish to happen. So it doesn't really matter whether it's a photocopier or a Star Trek replicator. It doesn't actually matter. Whatever you visualize is just a symbolic representation that tells your innate body wisdom, this is what I'd like to do. And then you mobilize the body's natural resources to deliver that kind of thing. So just pull the plug out and see all the little virus particles not being replicated anymore. So they just go and they turn to dust.
Yeah, love it. And you know, I mean, I'm interested in your view, you know, from that sort of scientific perspective and from your knowledge of how the unconscious mind works. You know, one of the issues at the moment as well is that when people are taken out of their normal rhythm and routine, particularly people who I work with who have perhaps they've ditched the booze and they're doing really well, you know, and they're focusing on getting fit and getting healthy, and then this sort of happens, their whole world tips up, and it can be so easy for our sort of subconscious mind to hit the fuck it button really and just go, well, so what, you know, and revert to kind of old habits. What's going on there in our subconscious minds? If we can understand it, we can hopefully address it, can't we?
I think we just go back to patterns. I think a lot of us, we just feel, if a person feels hopeless,
yes,
we're more likely to go back into previous patterns that we've had. And so really what we're looking to do is give ourselves a sense of hope.
Yeah.
This is one of the reasons why I actually talk about the mind-body connection and I talk about using visualization. Because if you understand that what you do with your mind does actually have a physical effect, it begins to create that little bit of hope.
Yeah.
And the hope comes because you start to believe in yourself. You believe that here is something I can do. I don't need to leave the house to do it. I don't need to go buy. So I don't have to order something off Amazon. Yeah. I can close my eyes and I can use my mind and I can imagine something happening. I can imagine myself being in control, or I can imagine myself behaving in a different way. And the key with these kind of visualization processes is repetition. Because almost all visualizations through repetition create a brain-changing effect called neuroplasticity. Yeah. And that means it's like the growth of a muscle. The only way a muscle will grow is if you keep doing the thing, keep the repetition going. So in the brain, they don't call it muscle growth, but the idea is exactly the same. They call it neuroplasticity. But neuroplasticity to neuroscientists really means muscle growth to someone who goes to the gym. So in the same way that you have to do repetitions to get muscle growth at the gym, you have to do repetitions to get neuroplasticity in the brain. So if you repeatedly visualize yourself being, let's say, your best self, being this confident self who's very much in control, very much in charge, very much got it all together. Visualize yourself interacting with people in that way, behaving in that way, and do it repetitively. And I mean like dozens, hundreds of times over weeks and months. You might have done it hundreds of times, but just that's like hundreds of reps at the gym with a muscle. Yeah. And you know what will happen to a muscle if you do that. So exactly the same thing will happen in the brain through neuroplasticity. And then what we do is we literally wire in that state. So whether we're visualizing something biologically or whether we're visualizing ourselves as the next greatest version of ourselves, it doesn't matter what you're visualizing. The key is repetition. But that will absolutely cause these neuroplastic changes in the brain. And so the reason why I talk about it in this sense is this kind of thing gives you hope.
Yeah.
If you realize that these things do actually happen, you just have to do the work.
Mm. Yeah. But I love that because, you know, a lot of it is, you're absolutely right. It's that feeling of being out of control, that fear. And I talk a lot about just finding ways to step away from the fear. So when you catch yourself getting into that terrible anxious state and you feel your heart starting to race when you're watching the news or whatever, it's so important, isn't it, to step away from the fear and have that little exercise that you've prepped, you know, that you can do again to help you feel empowered. I love that. Talk to us a bit more then about the kindness. And I thought that was, you know, that was so interesting. Mm. You know, that the just how important the importance of kindness and how it changes your state is so amazing. Now at this time there'll be a lot of people thinking, but I can't do my usual acts of kindness, everything's changed, we can't pay for a coffee, you know, in the queue for the person behind us anymore, or even necessarily pick up shopping in a lot of cases. So how can we focus on kindness? I mean, we have seen some lovely things happening, haven't we, in communities, but what would you recommend that sort of any of us can do, however small?
Yeah, well, it's, I think a big thing that all of us can do right now is to reach out to people through FaceTime, WhatsApp, Zoom, video calls, whatever, and just let them know that you're here. Check in with people, ask people how they are. One of my sisters called me this morning just on FaceTime, and I had a little laugh with her and my niece, and they were playing with the two cats. And I'm going to call one of my other, I've got three sisters, I'm going to call one of my other sisters who lives alone. She's asthmatic. Mm. So I'm going to do it after we finish today. I'm going to call her on FaceTime. Checking in with mum and dad, you know, and just let, I think when we're asked to stay at home, we have to find other ways. When we have to create this physical distance, we have to find ways to reduce the emotional distance.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's the emotional distance which really matters for us.
Yeah.
You know, so whether it's an email or a text or, you know, I wrote on my social media the other day there, I was just so inspired that one of my friends phoned me up just to tell me a joke.
Oh, that's sweet.
But that's actually
true. I've read a couple of people saying that they've actually had more connection with friends that they haven't spoken to in years.
Absolutely.
Because we're kind of checking in on each other. It's really true. And I love the idea that of you know, just kind of connecting over social media and having someone in the sober club had a virtual dinner party.
I was just going to say
we're
doing the same with my partner's parents on Friday night.
Great.
We're going to have dinner with our parents using the iPad.
Yeah. And we mustn't forget, you know, like people like my mum who's in a care home, you know, she doesn't have access to any of this. So it's literally a phone call. But I've started, you know, I've remembered after all these years, you know, the power of putting stuff in the post. So I've been sending her, you know, drawings and photos and stuff. I sent her a book of crossword puzzles the other day. I don't know how well that went down.
Yeah. But you know what I love, Janie, what you're doing there, and what we're all doing is we're doing things that I think in the modern world we've kind of forgotten how important they are. And we're almost going back to how we were when we were many years younger.
Yeah.
And we went down to the post office, we wrote a wee letter, we did all these things, and we're remembering some of the really important things, you know, that we just kind of forget. And we're also learning to be creative.
Yeah.
We're now challenged. We're now saying, how do I do that? How do I manage to, while creating physical distance between me and someone else, how do I reduce that emotional distance? Mm.
Yeah, it's really true. It really is. And I think you're right, you know, in terms of kindness, you know, as you say, these reaching out in these small ways, but also, of course, being kind to ourselves is really important. Yeah. Because, again, if people are feeling really very, you know, fearful for their livelihood, and of course, there are lots of people who, for whom this is, I mean, it's literally catastrophic financially and yeah, all for whatever they've been creating. I mean, just, you know, my heart really goes out to, I've spoken to quite a few people who are self-employed or they have their own business, and for whatever reason, they don't come into the bracket of being supported financially. And it's really tough for those people. And that's, again, a time when people can just kind of go into gloom and depression, and yet they've just have to find ways, I think, of being able to be kind to themselves, you know, yeah, cut themselves a bit of slack. What would be your recommendations for people who at this point in time are, for whatever reason, really, really feeling it, feeling quite, you know, even depressed, feeling down? What are the little tips you can give those people?
I guess we're all different, and I think there's different things that different people need. Some people need to get really, some people feel they need to get really practical. Mm. You know, and seeing that, again, that feeling of control, applying for the mortgage holiday, looking to see how you can tap into that supply or that support from the government. But and other people need to find ways of going inside.
Yeah.
And say, no, I'm going to meditate more. Because a lot of people would love to have a daily spiritual practice.
Yeah.
But they're too busy. Mm-hmm. So what we can do, some of us can do here is say, okay, I've been telling myself I've been too busy to have a daily spiritual practice. So here I will now start a daily spiritual practice. It might be doing an online yoga class. It might be, yeah, 10 minutes of meditation. It might be chanting, you know. It might even be, okay, I need my daily meditation practice, my daily spiritual practice will be going for a 10-minute walk to get some exercise.
And
yet for other people, it's completely different. Other people feel what kindness to themselves might be doing a course online, like learning to play. You've had this instrument in the house for 10 years, you've, yeah, never picked it up. I'm going to have a little go. I'm going to take a couple of lessons through YouTube or whatever, yeah, or I'm going to learn to speak a language.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think what these things do is they give us a wee sense of purpose.
Yeah.
And purpose is an amazing thing. You know, absolutely wonderful. A mutual friend, Jessica Yu, wrote a book on purpose, and it's such a wonderful thing, but it's a really great way. People who have purpose have far lower rates of depression.
Yeah.
And yeah, so what we can do during this period is create a mini purpose for ourselves.
Yeah.
And so one person's purpose might be to get practical and do all the financial things that they can apply for and do. Another person's practical thing is a daily spiritual practice. But another person's practical thing for purpose is, you know, doing a course, learning something new. But I think, yeah, all of these things are just to give us something to focus our attention on. Because, yeah, I think when we tend to focus too much on how we feel and what the issues and the worries are, then we can naturally start to feel more anxious and more afraid and more depressed about things. So what these things do, kindness does something similar, actually. Caring, thinking of someone else's needs and desires is... having a purpose of being kind takes you out of yourself, even just in the moment, even just for a few moments at a time. It takes your attention away from yourself. It takes you out of yourself, and your attention then lands on the needs of someone else, the immediate needs of another person, if it's kindness, or your attention goes to this course that I'm doing, or this practical step that I'm taking, or this spiritual practice that I'm doing. But it just takes the attention away from how you're feeling. And if you do that consistently, it's almost like you wire your brain, and your brain gets used to going to someplace else other than how I feel right now.
Yeah, I love that. So, David, what would be your hope then that might come from this in terms of, you know, how people, well, I mean, let's talk about the mind body connection. You know, what do you hope for?
Out of all of this, I hope for a few things. I hope we see during this period of this strange time with the coronavirus, the reality of the coronavirus, I hope we see, and I'm seeing already, more kindness on a global scale than we've ever seen.
Yeah.
And I hope that we remember to keep doing that.
Yeah.
They say that it takes about anything from 21 days to 66 days to wire a habit.
Right.
So maybe this will give us enough time, enough caring for each other, enough checking in and looking out for each other to wire in a habit of kindness so that we don't just stop being as kind when we're out the other side of this, that we continue, that this has almost become who we are. And so I hope that we see us doing more of that. And I also hope to see us simplifying our lives a bit more and getting back to, you know, some natural ways of doing things.
Yeah. I mean, certainly if nothing else, I think we've all been forced to look at what really matters to us. The things we thought mattered 3 or 4 weeks ago do not matter anymore. They really don't. What matters now is, you know, your health and your family and your connections and your well-being and having some loo roll, right?
Yeah. You know,
our perspectives have all changed. And you're right. And if we can carry that the sense of perspective over and the simplification, but also the gratitude, I think, because, you know, just to see some sunshine, some blue sky and some daffodils, it's like, it's so, so amazing, isn't it? It feels so amazing.
Yeah.
It is incredible.
Yeah.
I really appreciate it, David. Tell us a little bit about your personal development club that you have.
Oh, personal development club. It's a monthly live talk that I do online. Where I cover a different subject every month. So this month, actually, in a couple of weeks' time, obviously, I'm doing a little bit on coronavirus, taking people's questions, a wee bit of science of where things are going, you know, what's currently being researched, etc. But other months, I've did mind-body connection, I've did bits on kindness, self-esteem, specific topics. And members also have access to a website that I continually update with training materials on mind-body connection, self-esteem, kindness, spirit, life and spirituality, that kind of thing.
Fantastic. Give us your website then, David.
DrDavidHamilton.com.
Excellent. Really appreciate it, David. It's fantastic to talk to you. I really appreciate your wisdom. And I hope you get that book written. I'm sure you will now.
Thank you so much.
You'll be doing two editions, won't you? I can see it all this time. Thank you. Yeah,
thank you. It's been my pleasure.
Thank you, David. I hope you noticed that in there, as well as the using the power of the mind, David mentioned, of course, the importance of good nutrition. I've said it many times, the eating a rainbow thing. It's getting harder and harder. I don't know about where you are, but I'm finding it really hard to get a really good mix of fresh fruit and veg. But wherever we can, you know, let's just keep our diets as healthy as it's possible over this time. And in terms of boosting immunity, again, it's something I've spoken about a lot, but I really do believe that vitamin C is one of the key immune boosters. And you will have seen the news reports coming out of China and New York now. I think was at the beginning of last week, New York have started treating patients with high doses of vitamin C. So there's something in this. There really is. And I think, you know, for most of us, we're aware of the power of vitamin C, but we just don't take enough. Now, there is a school of thought that says that the liposomal vitamin C is much more bioavailable than the regular kind of capsules. So to that end, I've got a colleague, Helena Kavan, who runs the Milestone Detox. In fact, she was a podcast guest, wasn't she? Of course. And Helena and her husband have done masses of research on this, and they've created a little online course about how to make your own liposomal vitamin C. And the reason for that is because you can make it for about 1/20th of the price, because this stuff's expensive, particularly in the dose that we really need. It's not difficult. There's just a few key ingredients that hopefully are still easily buyable. And it's not difficult, but it is a little bit of a process that they've worked out as to how you can make your own liposomal vitamin C. So if you're interested in that, they've got an online course. It does cost about, I think it's about $25, something like that. I'm not on commission. I'm not earning from this, but I do think it's a fascinating thing to be doing right now and to look into boosting our immunity. So if you go to thesoberclub.com, you can see all the info there as to how you can just click and buy that course if you're interested. But either way around, do think about getting decent quantities of vitamin C. I have also interviewed Dr. Sarah Myhill, who is a leading ecological medicine doctor. I have to look that one up till I bring the interview. I probably will put that interview out on my own website, but I'll tell you how to find that interview, because Dr. Sarah Myhill is indeed talking about the fact that, in her opinion, we are probably all at some point going to get this virus. That's quite a sobering thought, isn't it? And really, our immunity is going to be, one very, very big factor in how we get through it. So again, she recommends high doses of vitamin C. And we have to keep topping it up. It's not just something you can do once. So if you're interested in that, have a look at, go to thesoberclub.com, click on that blog post there. While you're there, please grab my alcohol-free challenge PDF there, just giving you reasons to do that. And obviously, if you're interested in joining the Sober Club, we would love to have you as a member. So just click on how to join, and it would be lovely to see you as part of the Sober Club. Whatever's going on for you right now, reach out for help if you need it. This is the best time to be sober. It really is. From that position, you can boost your own well-being, you can help other people, you can shine a little bit of a light one way or another in all of this. If I have any guests you want to recommend to me for the podcast, then please just drop me an email, janie@janielegrace.com. You can find me on Instagram at janielegrace, and I've also set up a new free Facebook group called Imperfectly Natural Self-Care. In fact, I'm calling it Self-Care Isolation. We've got self-isolation, make it self-care isolation. So drop me a line if you have a suggestion for a podcast guest. I have a whole bunch of podcast guests, but some of them just aren't really relevant right now, as I'm sure you can imagine. So let's focus on the guests that you would bring you in the next few weeks. And obviously, wherever you are, whatever you're up to, stay as well as you can, and stay positive and stay sober, and give yourself a massive hug. Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast with Janie Lee Grace. Please subscribe to us on iTunes, rate us, share on social media, and tune in again.